Chapter 13, 1800 GMT. Tash got her next call from Mel on Skythrust 2 around 6 in the evening. By then Tash was sitting with Grace in one of the many canteens in Government House, a building that was accustomed to hosting multiple all-nighters, as tonight was likely to be. Sitting, sipping coffee, keeping up to date and preparing, while they waited to be called for some specific task. Phones, personal and work, on the tabletop before them. The smart walls carrying various news feeds. Also on the table, snacks. Neither of them was hungry, though Tash guiltily thought she ought to force something down, as her body kept its own time on this timeless day. Even before the sun went away, she had already just been through an all-nighter. So, caffeine and cakes. Meanwhile, it seemed, Mel and Marlowe were still observing stuff down there, over the Southern Ocean, as Skythrust drifted under a still empty star-spattered sky. "And what a sky," Mel said softly. "The crew have dimmed the ship's lights at last. We're sitting under a clear wood dome so transparent we might as well be out in the open. And that stratospheric sky, in this cooling day-night, is getting even clearer as the last moisture condenses out of the air. Wow, what a spectacle. The Southern Hemisphere stars beat out our sparse litter even on a normal night. Of course, most of us, including the Astronomer Royal, keep looking west for any glimmer of the long-set sun. But just now we lost Neptune, Tash, right on the edge of the solar system. Took all this time for the last of the sunlight to slog out there and back again. Now the whole planetary system is dark. Wow, think of that. Lit up only by starlight." Grace Butterworth raised her eyes at overhearing Mel's words, whispering from the phone. "Dark planets, huh? Can't say that's top of my agenda just now." Tash grinned back. There was worse company than Grace, even if she was deliberately provocative at times. Just as well since, as the day had worn on, Fred Bowles had made it clear that he expected the two of them to stay close, to stay ready. Tash, presumably for her diligence, academic intelligence, and smattering of science, and Grace for her reliable muscle, willpower, and ability to get things done. "Okay," Tash said, "but somebody has to be thinking about that kind of thing, Grace, along with the stress on the national grid and a bit of petty looting on Northumberland Road." Mel was still talking, evidently distracted by her huge sky. "I'm worried about Jim, of course. And she, too. Oh, the lodestone seems safe enough. They are a stationary habitat and won't drift far, and the whole thing is encrusted with battery packs. They will be able to survive a long time, and retrieval will be easy. Whereas Jim's Almeric is a lightweight Mars ferry. Mel, can we set up an open link with she, just you, me, and him, whatever comes next?" A frown in the phone's tiny screen. An in-joke group hug. But you know what he's like. Withdraws into himself. "I can try. I need to check Jane is okay. Later." More coffee. More screen watching. Word came through confirming that this was indeed going to be an all-nighter, at least. They weren't surprised. There were bunk rooms. Tash and Grace's name had been added to a rota. "I knew it," said Grace. The government as a whole couldn't sleep, locally or nationally, because the population wasn't sleeping. But after the first few hours, the first frantic round of meetings at ministerial, intergovernmental, and ultimately FIS level, it had become clear that there was nothing much to be done about the situation, for now. Nothing save for sticking plaster solutions to the obvious immediate problems. Schools closed tomorrow, at least, as the Cobra meeting had recommended, and Tash smiled as she imagined Marlowe's rage at such trivialities. Well, it was something sensible that could be done. More widely, people were reacting in their diverse ways. There had been a run on the stores, online and otherwise, and a strategic decision had already been made to impose a quick rationing of essential items, notably items like torches and storm lamps, long-life foodstuffs like rice. almost a reflex move by government agencies, their procedures hardened by decades of disruption of various kinds. There was always panic buying, Tash thought, from floods to pandemics, and now the vanishing of the sun. Meanwhile, as the evening closed in, a lot of people had gone home from work early, if they had gone in at all, to hunker down with their families. In Newcastle, by now it would have been dark anyhow. The world had started to feel a little more normal. The pubs and bars were becoming crowded, the police were reporting. Cinemas too, especially the big immersive three-dimensional multi-sensory venues. A place to huddle with other people, Tash guessed, and to escape from the world for a while. Similarly, the police were reporting that the churches were packed too. On a national scale, the darkened cities were flooded with police resources, amid talk of sending in the army if there was trouble. Generally, however, there was not much sign of the drink and drug-fueled riots of which the online tabloids had gleefully warned. Tash had observed this before, in emergencies of various sorts during her own life. When the real crisis came, most people stayed calm. Grace, though, had different contacts. She claimed to know survivalist types who were heading for their end-of-the-world bunkers, caches of food and medicine and weapons and such, deep in the countryside. Then again, she said, some of those bunkers were a century old, having been first dug out during Cold War nuke scares. Elsewhere, environmental campaigners fretted that the governments would use the crisis as a ploy to open up fossil fuel sources. But such campaigners always fretted about that. Others went to the churches to pray to mitigate the savagery of a vengeful God. And still others were talking about the sunlight shutdown itself as an act of war, waged by some power yet to be identified. Tash, politely, tried to avoid getting drawn into any arguments with Grace over all these freshly minted conspiracy theories. She vaguely fretted about Grace's apparent relative credulity, though. She seemed to take some of this stuff seriously. Time wore on. The weather closed in, as Tash followed through her phone feeds, cocooned as she was in-house. Over Newcastle, there had been fog in the afternoon, then rain, and it was said some snow inland. Water vapour condensing out of the cooling air. Tash remembered Marlowe telling the Cobra it would take a little longer than that, a couple of days, before the snow came in earnest, but she forgave the Astronomer Royal the hasty, flaky predictions that had been forced out of her. Nobody knew. At about 8, Grace showed Tash a report from Moscow, where it was already midnight, deep, heavy snow, and a weird hail covering the streets half a metre deep. Granted, Moscow in winter isn't particularly balmy anyhow. Quite a difference from your Astronomer Royal swanning it on her skyboat, isn't it? But of course she's floating around over a nice warm ocean, as is Britain, I suppose. As the ocean cools down slower than the air, so it keeps coastal regions warmer than the deep hearts of continents. For now, Newcastle shivers, but Moscow freezes. Tash raised her eyebrows. You know some meteorology? I know a lot of stuff that might surprise you. Science was my bag as a kid. That and rugby. Got to Cambridge to study natural sciences. Cambridge? I never knew that either. But halfway through my second year, I was recruited. MI5. I had already been an LC Marine Reserve Cadet before Cambridge. Recruiter implied that my combination of brains and brawn could be diverted to more useful purposes in the government's employ. Almost a cliche, isn't it? Still, fair enough. Especially when they had me go through a second degree at Edinburgh on politics, ethics, philosophy. I'm not just some bodyguard, you see. I'm a scientifically literate advisor to the minister and a bodyguard. Tash thought that over. This was just about the most personal information Grace had ever shared with her, and coming out of nowhere. Memo to self, she thought. Get locked down with anyone long enough, and you'll get their life story. Second memo, never underestimate. She extended a hand. Well, I'm glad to have met you properly, Grace Butterworth. There are worse people I could be spending this particular evening with. Grace took the hand and shook it, with remarkable delicacy, Tash thought. Likewise. Does this mean I'm one of the in-jokes now? In your dreams. More coffee. So they sat and talked and watched their screens and responded to a couple of queries from Bowles. Tash phoned her father a couple of times. At about 9, King George, secure in his own bolt hole at Balmoral, with his family, addressed the nation. In 1940, just as France had fallen, Churchill warned us that if we failed at that moment, we might have sunk into a new dark age. Well, Winston, when it comes to dark ages, we could show you a thing or two tonight. But I can echo what Churchill went on to say when I promise you that we will get through this trial, whatever it is, however it has come about, however it is resolved. And when people look back in 1,000 years' time, they will still say this was their finest hour. It wasn't a surprise to hear from George at Balmoral. He remained monarch of independent Scotland, as well as of the Federation of the English Provinces, if not of a proudly independent Wales. And Tash wasn't particularly surprised to hear him quoting Churchill, the go-to source for speeches designed to inspire Britons. Even if the country Churchill had preserved in war now existed only as a historical curiosity, a precursor of the modern loose alliance of nations. But she was impressed by that smart allusion to a dark age. Dark, it certainly was. When the king was done, Grace surprised Tash again by producing a small hip flask, with 2 tiny pop-out cups. She poured out small nips and passed one to Tash. Here, sky whiskey, nectar of the gods. God save the king. She knocked back her glass. I was introduced to it when MI5 sent me for more basic training under his sister. Marine training? Who? Charlotte? You're pulling my leg. Would I? Serving officer, still. Tough taskmaster she was, too. But the whiskey failed to warm Tash, and the moment passed, and still they sat in silence. Waiting. At about 9:30, Grace got a message from her sister in Naples. A nutter had tried to break into the maternity ward where Grace's new little niece was being cared for, yelling about demon babies born on the devil's day. Grace glowered. I wish I'd been there. I'd have introduced him to the devil, all right. But your niece is safe. For now. But after that, Grace didn't put down her phone. Waiting. A little after 10 p.m, Tasha's personal phone lit up with a panicky message from she. A relayed broadcast from the Almirich. Jim Boyd was in deeper trouble.